Good morning, church. Oh, I'm excited to see all of you worshiping God together here. And you see? Did you have this fish in your sushi last night? Maybe. Okay, it's salmon, right? And you know it. And the picture shows its annual run swimming upstream in a river somewhere against the current. A few years ago, I was in BC, and I was lucky enough to see such a salmon run in a river. And the fish in the river would swim upstream with all its might for a short time, then pause, probably take a breather, and then to regain strength and swim ahead again. And the swim and rest cycle would repeat many, many times in an hour as the fish struggled against the strong current. And I saw some fish jumping into the air like a flying fish over rock or maybe just over a little waterfall. And every year, wild salmon in the ocean starts the run, sometimes for hundreds of miles, to return to its birthplace inland to spawn the next generation. The image of salmon fighting against swift current, waterfalls, and predators like bears in its spawning journey sometimes is a metaphor for any human struggle against long odds. Likewise, do you see that Christianity is also a faith swimming against the current? Do you see that God's word often differs from what the world is teaching us? In the sermon this morning, we will learn that following Jesus means living upside down by the world's standard, so that we can enrich each other and transform lives. So today's passage is from Matthew chapter 5, verses 1 to 10. And it's on the projector, so let's read it. Verse 1, "Now when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him, and he began to teach them. He said, 'Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven.'" And before diving into the text, let me explain the context. And in the Bible, there are four Gospels in the New Testament that record Jesus' life stories on earth. And Matthew is one of the Gospels, and his first two chapters record Jesus' birth story. Later, after Jesus starts his ministry, he has called people to follow him, and 12 men become his close disciples, living with him 24/7. In chapter 5, as a crowd comes to Jesus, he goes up a small hill. It's a mountainside, but it's not a mountain like Rocky. It's imagined like a small hill, bunny hill, to teach his disciples about the kingdom of heaven. His teaching from chapter 5 to 7, fairly made famous, we call them the Sermon on the Mount. As Jesus teaches about the kingdom of heaven, which is quite new to his Jewish audience, they naturally have questions on their mind. What does the kingdom look like? Am I qualified to enter the kingdom? So let's unpack the passage. And when reading, you probably have noticed a few things. Number one, the 8 verses from 3 to 10 follow the same pattern. And first, they all begin with the word blessed. And number two, after the word blessed is the type of people. So you have the poor in spirit, you have the mourn, you have the meek, hunger for righteousness, and etc. And thirdly, the word for, connecting the two, and basically meaning because it connects a type of person to a blessing. So for example, let's take the first blessing. Verse 3 says, people who are poor in spirit will join God's kingdom. So, and let's look at the key word, blessed. It means happy or fortunate, and blessed is probably sort of the best available translation in the text. So let's take a look at the 8 types of person in the kingdom. Poor in spirit, mourn, meek, hungry, merciful, pure, peacemakers, and persecuted. Ask yourself, do you want to be like them? Do you want to be poor or poor in spirit? No! I want to be rich. I want to be confident. I want to be self-reliant. Do you want to mourn? No! I want to be happy. Do you want to be meek? No, I want to be powerful and important. Do you want to be hunger and thirst? No, I want to be satisfied. Do you want to be merciful? No, I want to take care of myself alone. Taking care of people is troublesome and costly. Do you want to be pure? No, I want to be sophisticated. Do you want to be peacemaker? No, I want to be competitive and stay away from the messy troubles of making peace. Do you want to be persecuted? No, I want to be left alone. I want to be popular. I want to be liked. I want to be followed, not canceled. You see, Jesus' teachings are a shock to the audience. The kingdom values not only totally contradict the audience values, but also our values today. And Jesus does not stop the upside down teaching at verse 10 either. In the rest of chapter 5, he uses this pattern 6 times. You have heard it said, ... but I said to you, ... In each case, he mentions a traditional teaching and points out its faulty interpretation. Jesus then explains the proper interpretation and application. Jesus' explanation turned traditional practice upside down. The kingdom is an upside down faith. Let's dig into one case in verses 21 to 22. And I'll read it. You have heard that it was said to the people long ago, you shall not murder, and whoever murders will be liable to judgment. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council. And whoever says, you fool, will be liable to the hell of fire. You know, the case refers to this 10th commandment about you shall not kill, right? Violating the law by murdering people will bring judgment. But Jesus is redefining it. Angry with a brother, liable to judgment. Insulting another person, liable to judgment. Labeling someone a fool, liable to judgment. And you may say, wow, what's happening? How can anger and name-calling be compared to murder? Nobody dies. Name-calling is highly insulting in Jewish culture because a person's identity is stripped away and an offensive identity is substituted. As a result, though name-calling does not kill anyone, it kills a person's identity. In his upside-down teaching, Jesus shows the sequence of events that will lead to murder. Anger, insult, name-calling, ending with murder. And this murder sequence really matches the iceberg model of human behavior. Have you seen an iceberg flowing in the sea? It's magnificent. Actually, we only see the top 15% of any iceberg because the rest lies beneath the water. In a way, our behavior is like iceberg. Our behavior is only the visible, say 10% of our mind. And what a person does is that tip of the iceberg. While the behaviors are external and visible, factors like thoughts, beliefs, and values hide inside and beneath the surface. Though invisible like the bottom bulk of an iceberg, these factors drive our behavior. Similarly, Jesus points out that fulfilling the command, do not murder, is not accomplished simply by avoiding physical killing. So if I have a knife, I stab you, but 1 centimeter away from your heart, I stop. That's not murder. But Jesus said, no, no, no. Jesus says, the root cause of murder is broken relationship. When a relationship is broken, people show contempt, insult, anger, hatred. And murder is just the horrific final act of the chain of events. Murder is just the tip of the iceberg. Have you ever hated people, fought with people, showed contempt, killed people in your head? I'm not asking anyone to raise your hand. I do. I've done all this, and all against the kingdom values. And then you may say, well, you know, if the requirements to enter the kingdom are so strict that even anger will be judged, how can anyone be qualified? Well, that's why Jesus starts the teaching with the eight blessings or beatitudes. Out of the eight blessings, the first four are about relationship with God. And then the next four are about relationship with people. Why in this order, you may ask? Well, the kingdom sheds light on our total sinfulness and brokenness before God. We cannot avoid sins. We are helpless, struggling against it. And our only hope is to come before God as a person who is poor in spirit and ask for mercy and forgiveness. After connecting with God, we then see others as God's people like us. They are also made in God's image, like us. As a result, we will honor people's identity in God and will not call them names. Instead, we'll be merciful towards others. Said in verse 7, blessed are those are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. This blessing is the fifth in the list of eight blessings, but the first in terms of human relationship. Then, what is mercy? What is mercy then? Well, mercy is compassion for those in pain, misery, or distress. Mercy is offering a helping hand to those who are in need. They may have just lost their jobs. Their loved ones are sick. They face financial hardship. They are lost. They may be remorseful for what they have done. Those are the people who are in need. But this kingdom value of mercy is against the culture. In ancient time, mercy was not a virtue. And far from it, a Roman philosopher said, mercy was the disease of the soul. Some Roman philosophers criticized, even when mercy inspired by misfortune, they thought that, okay, it was okay to help, but he warned against feeling compassion. But this kingdom value of mercy is also against our natural instinct that says we should take care of ourselves first. How can we become merciful then? Well, mercy is not merely a task to be ticked off on my to-do list or on my good Christian to-do list or to earn applause. Mercy starts when we feel our spiritual emptiness and brokenness. Mercy starts when we cry out from the bottom of our heart for God's mercy. Mercy starts when God treats us, gives us mercy, gives us grace, gives us forgiveness. God treats us much, much better than what we deserve. God has repeatedly offered forgiveness, provision, grace. God has dealt with us like a loving father dealing with his children. This godly reality must show up in us also, right? How can we claim to be his children and not be merciful like him? How can we call for retribution or revenge against other people when we ourselves are forgiven of our sin? Mercy comes from mercy. Our mercy to each other comes from God's mercy to us. If we lack mercy, one reason may be that we have never fully received or appreciated God's mercy in the first place. And this is the idea of reciprocity. When God is merciful to us, we also should be merciful towards others. When we show mercy towards other people, God will show his mercy toward us. In short, the key to becoming a merciful person is to become a broken person in front of God. And humility is a basic trait of that spirituality. Humble people who acknowledge sin, not a smug one who congratulates himself or herself on his or her personal goodness. Also, humble people are grateful for God's mercy, which in turn makes us merciful to others with all our heart. This morning, do you feel that you are poor in spirit, humble before God, needing God, repenting, and helpless? Jesus teaches a new set of kingdom values for his followers, like us, to live. The new values are counter to the culture. Individual transformation must start from the inside, the thoughts, the beliefs, and the values. Through faith in God, Jesus' followers will turn the values upside down. So at this point, you may wonder what a merciful person looks like. Well, I glean the following four traits of a merciful person from the parable of the Good Samaritan. The parable is recorded in Luke chapter 10. I'm not going to explain it. I'm not going to the text, so fine. But I'm just going to highlight four steps, the four traits of a merciful person. The first is notice of people in need. In verse 33, it records, well, actually, before that, a Jew is robbed by thieves, and the person is beaten up, half dead, left half dead on the roadside, and two other people passing by without helping him. So now this is verse 33. A Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to where he was, the beaten person, and he saw him. So the Samaritan walked by the roadside, saw the person in distress. So notice of people in need. Next is a heartfelt response. When he, the Samaritan, saw the beaten man, he, the Samaritan, had compassion on him. He saw the plight of the man. He stirred up his heart. He had compassion on him. Roman philosophers would rail against it, but not the Samaritan. Third, overcoming hurdles. To the Samaritan, there were lots of hurdles to help that person in need. Number one, he's a big one. He's a Jew. I'm a Samaritan. We are arch enemies. Why should I help him? Then, on the personal side, that means it's like inconvenience. I have to stop. I have to help him. He's going to use up my time, and I may have to pay for his cure. Just imagine all the troubles helping that person will get me into. But the Samaritan overcome the hurdles and go to the last step, action. And if you have time, just I urge you to read it. It's verse 34 to 35. The sentences are so driven by verbs. He went to him, bound up his wound, pouring oil and wine, then set him on his own beast. That means the Samaritan had to walk. Brought him to an inn and took care of him and paid for all the expenses. So actually, there's a typo. Should be action, not action. But look at that. That's what a merciful person looked like in action. And then, that's a parable. In what ways can we as a community show mercy to others? Well, I can think of three ways. We help those caught in desperate circumstances look around, and many people are in need. Turkey and Syria have just suffered devastating earthquakes. Thousands of people died. Millions of people have lost their home. Many more people desperately need relief. Well, look closer. There are many needy families in Edmonton that we can help. The economy is not doing so well, lays off, hardship. And we all know that this coming week is going to be cold. So think of the homeless people. Or think of the people that you know and who are facing hardships or crises. Two, secondly, we can help those caught in sin. By sharing the gospel, we help others to come to know Jesus and his love for us. And we can also gently restore other believers who are struggling with sin. Lastly, we can show mercy by forgiving those who have sinned against us. Lastly, Jesus demonstrates the perfect mercy. While on earth, he identifies with everyone, the average people, the marginalized, the despised. He heals the sick, feeds the hunger, and saves people from their sin. On the cross, he dies for our sin and sets free captives of sin so that we all can reconnect with God and have relationship with him. Sermon theme for this quarter is whoever refreshes others will be refreshed. As Jesus' disciple, We follow kingdom's values that are counterculture. Also, we can influence others through our mercy services, as God has shown his mercy to us. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Are you growing in mercy? And, we have the breakout session for discussion. There are three spiritual questions sort of projected on the screen. And